Welcome to History's Mysteries. I am your host, Gage Reed. This is a podcast where I will talk about people I like from history, both real and legendary. I do my best to make sure the information is as accurate as possible, but you will notice some scenes where I fill in the blanks a little. I want to apologize in advance for the sound quality. This is being recorded in my bedroom on my iPhone. I will also apologize in advance for any mispronunciations. I do not claim to be an expert. Now that that's out of the way, here's episode 1, Vlad the Impaler. One particularly cold winter in the year 1431, a child was born. A boy who would eventually grow into the most feared of men among his enemies, but also his friends. A man whose reputation of inflicting pain on a whim was only exceeded by the creativity his horrific actions displayed. Vlad III, or Vlad Dracula, was the second son of Vlad Dracul, who himself became voivode of Wallachia in 1436. The elder Vlad earned the name Dracul, meaning dragon, after joining the famous Order of the Dragon in 1431. Our young Vlad's early life was not unlike that of any other prince in his time. He would spend his days, along with his brothers Mircea and Radu, at court in Wallachia. Young Vlad would train his mind and his body as if he were a knight of King Arthur's Round Table. He would practice horsemanship and become proficient in the use of each and every kind of weapon. His evenings consisted of religious studies led by his mother, as well as arithmetic, logic, geometry, music, grammar, public speaking, and philosophy. It goes without saying that he excelled in each and every category. The world would be his for the taking. Soon, though, that would take on an entirely different meaning. When Vlad was 11, he and Radu, who was 7 at the time, were sent to be held hostage by the Turkish Sultan to guarantee the elder Dracul's loyalty and assistance. Radu immediately took to life at the Sultan's palace. They were treated well, even though they were technically hostages. Radu was a good-looking boy, well-mannered and liked by everyone. Vlad, on the other hand, Vlad was angry. Angry at his father for sending him here, angry at the Sultan for demanding it, angry at Radu for not being angry. He lashed out. He got punished. So on and so forth until both he and his captors were found comfort in the routine. When he was 17, he returned home to Wallachia, parting with Radu, who chose to stay in the Sultan's court at Adrianople. Finally, he would have his life back. But upon his arrival, he discovered his father had been deposed and killed. The nobles responsible for his father's death were also responsible for burying his older brother alive in support of a rival. While he was away from home, John Hunyadi of Hungary had placed Vlad's cousin, Vladislav II, on the throne, only 1 year before his return. His resentment only grew as, "If only I had been there," would forever echo in the back of his mind. Vladislav and Hunyadi launched a campaign on the neighboring Ottomans around the time of Vlad's arrival in autumn 1448. The Ottoman-backed Vlad took Wallachia in Vladislav's absence in October. Finally, he was where he belonged, sitting on the throne in Wallachia. He was home. That is until Vladislav came back, and he was forced back to the Ottomans by the end of the year. Eventually seeking refuge in Hungary, where he would spend the next 6 years waiting for his opportunity. He would not spend his time wallowing in his defeat, though. He would bide his time, but he would use it wisely. He spent his time in Hungary gaining support among the Hungarian leadership. He spent his time training, dining, even sleeping with the soldiers to gain their trust and loyalty on the battlefield. And no, not like that. Nasty. In time, he became a respected man amongst those in power in Hungary. Whether it was good planning or fate, relations between Vladislav and Hungary had reached an end in 1456. At the age of 25, Vlad decided it was time to return home. He took control of Wallachia with Hungarian support. As he entered the throne room, his army at his back, the only thing standing between him and his birthright was Vladislav. Knowing that they would certainly be killed for resisting, Vladislav's personal guard laid down their weapons. and presumably took two huge steps back. "Cowards," they would hear as Vladislav's voice cracked and his feet shuffled, nervously looking left and right. "You're all cowards," shouted the now visibly sweating Vladislav. "We like to think of it as good risk-reward assessment, but no, it's your moment," thought his men, probably. As he took the final step towards his destiny, Vlad ordered that Vladislav and the rest of his men be impaled on stakes and left for all. Vlad ordered that Vladislav and the rest of his men be impaled on stakes and left for all to see what happens to those who oppose him. Okay, so no one actually knows how Vladislav died. Some say he was killed by Vlad in hand-to-hand combat. Some say he expired in battle. So the previous scene is just what I like to think it was like. Gruesome as the event was, he has yet to earn his most well-known moniker. Although he was now voivode of Wallachia, his destiny has yet to be fully realized. But more importantly, he still had to avenge the death of his father and his brother. While Vladislav may have sat on the throne, it was the nobles who had placed him there. Easter Sunday, 1457. As Vlad sits upon his throne, watching the 200-ish nobles and their families finish Easter dinner, he takes a deep breath. He makes an almost imperceptible hand gesture to signal his men that the real reason for their attendance is about to begin. He stands up as an immediate hush takes the room. He addresses the crowd as follows. "How many princes have you served in your life here?" The crowd murmurs. A few men speak up. 16, I think," said one nobleman. "For me, it is 14," answered another. "To be truthful, I cannot remember," said yet another. Growing visibly angry, Vlad silenced the crowd before, in a slightly agitated tone, responding, This is the problem with our society. So-called noblemen getting fat eating the food of the people, supporting a prince only as long as that prince does your bidding. Arrest them," he said. His men began separating the guests. The young and able-bodied were marched from the capital of Turgavista to a ruined castle in the mountains above the Argus River. They were sent with nothing but the clothes on their back, and forced into slave labor to build Vlad's future castle until those clothes had fallen off. Many of them died during those months. The rest of the guests in attendance were immediately taken outside of the walls and impaled on spikes, left to rot. To replace the old boyars, Vlad promoted common men to the position, men who would be loyal to him and only him. Now, we're about to talk about some of Vlad's many atrocities during his first true reign from 1456 to 1462. But before that, I have to talk about some of what I believe to be his reasons for committing them. Despite his nickname, Vlad the Impaler was a man with a strong sense of morality, and he tried to force that moral code onto everyone else. Also, I can't help but to believe he took at least some pleasure in killing and torture. He seemed to have been particularly interested in female chastity. Maidens who were not virgins, unchaste widows, and adulterous wives were subject to cruel punishment. Often, such women would suffer the cruelest of deaths. They'd have their sexual organs removed, breasts cut off, and impaled through the vagina. One account tells of Vlad impaling a farmer's wife in her front yard. Her crime? She was extremely ill and bedridden, and for this reason her husband's clothes were unfinished. She was impaled, despite the husband's pleas, and replaced with a young virgin from a neighboring farm the same day. Another account tells of an unfaithful wife who had her breast cut off, her body skinned, and was impaled in a square in Turgavista, her skin stretched out on a nearby table. He also deeply believed in honesty and hard work. If a merchant cheated their customers, they would often find themselves meeting the friendly end of a stake. Once, a traveling merchant was passing through. While on his stay, 160 gold pieces were stolen. He told Vlad about what had happened. Vlad instructed him that he leave his cart in the middle of town that night, and his money would be returned by morning. The following morning, the merchant counted his money and discovered the missing gold returned in full, but also an extra piece. He returned to the court and ecstatically told Vlad that it was no longer at a loss, and that he had received an extra gold piece. Vlad then informed him that the extra piece was a test, and had he not been truthful, he would have been impaled alongside the thief, who was simultaneously being dragged to the stake. Another tale of his hatred of dishonesty and thievery is described here. The following is a quote from Russian and Romanian narratives. Quote, Dracula so hated evil in his land that if someone stole, lied, or committed some injustice, he was not likely to stay alive. Whether he was a nobleman, or a priest, or a monk, or a common man, and even if he had great wealth, he could not escape death if he were dishonest. And he was so feared that the peasants say that in a certain place, near the source of a river, there was a fountain. At this fountain, at the source of this river, there came many travelers from many lands, and all these people came to drink at the fountain, because the water was so cool and sweet. Dracula had purposely put this fountain in a deserted place, and set a cup wonderfully wrought in gold, and whoever wished to drink it from this gold cup had to put it back in its place. And so long as this cup was there, no one dared steal it. My personal favorite story about Vlad, and yes, I'm fully aware of how bad that sounds, is when two Turkish ambassadors were sent to Vlad's court. They introduced themselves and refused to remove their turbans due to their customs. Vlad did not like that. "So, you're saying you wish to never be seen without your turban in public?" said Vlad. "Then, I wish to assist you in maintaining your custom. Take these men and drive nails into their skulls so that they never be forced to suffer the shame of showing their heads." Yeah. Rough stuff. Speaking of the Turks, Vlad fought with them often. Wallachia lay between Turkish-controlled Bulgaria and the rest of Central and Eastern Europe. Vlad consistently refused to pay tribute to the Sultan, as he had agreed to previously. In the winter of 1462 and 1463, full-fledged war broke out. Vlad was seriously outnumbered here, so his strategic prowess was on full display. He utilized such methods as scorched earth, burning the land and resources while retreating, poisoned wells, and even germ warfare. He would send people with infectious diseases to infiltrate the enemy ranks. On June 17, 1462, he led a raid known in Romanian history as the Night Attack. But the Sultan's army continued onwards and reached the outskirts of Vlad's capital city. There, Vlad used his most potent weapon, psychological warfare. The following is an account from a Greek historian of what greeted the invaders. Quote, "He, the Sultan, marched on for about 5 kilometers when he saw his men impaled. The Sultan's army came across a field with stakes about 3 kilometers long and 1 kilometer wide, and there were large stakes on which they could see the impaled bodies of men, women, and children, about 20,000 of them, as they said. Quite a spectacle for the Turks and the Sultan himself. The Sultan, in wonder, kept saying that he could not conquer the country of a man who could do such terrible and unnatural things, and put his power and his subjects to such use. He also used to say that this man who did such things would be worthy of more. And the other Turks, seeing so many people impaled, were scared out of their wits. There were babies clinging to their mothers on the stakes, and birds had made nests in their breasts." End quote. Although this display persuaded the Sultan in his army retreat, it didn't end the war. Sultan Mehmed, the Saxon merchant class, and the Wallachian boyars gave their support to Vlad's younger brother, Radu the Fair. Yeah, I wonder who they liked more. Remember, Radu chose to stay behind when Vlad left the Sultan's care 14 years ago. After 14 years apart, it's safe to say that Vlad wasn't going to appeal to his younger sibling's sense of brotherly love. Vlad traveled to Transylvania to ask for King Matthias Corvinus in late 1462, only to be imprisoned by the king. The Saxon merchants had forged documents to make it seem like Vlad had planned to betray King Matthias. In return, Radu would give concessions to the Saxons. Vlad was held hostage in Visegrad, Hungary, until 1475. In early 1476, Vlad fought for King Matthias against the Ottomans. With the assistance of Hungarian and Moldavian troops, he forced Basarab Leota to flee Wallachia. Basarab had taken the throne from Radu, but Basarab returned before the end of the year, backed by the Ottomans. Vlad was killed in battle before January 1477. After his death, tales of his cruelty spread like wildfire throughout German-speaking lands, but in his own, he was and still is seen as a Romanian hero. Despite the horrible things he's done, he's still seen as a good leader. He helped bring order, reduced crime and corruption, and he single-handedly held off the Ottoman Empire at a time when everyone around him was falling. Were the atrocities simply normal for the time? I think Vlad is a good example of how we all have the capacity to do good in the world, but also great evil. Anyway, thank you for listening. and I hope you enjoyed episode 1 of History's Mytheries. Feel free to email me at historiesmytheriespodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. For questions, corrections, or requests, this episode was written and produced by me, Gage Reed, and I'll see you next week.